welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. I am your host, James Gilmore. It's episode number 248, and with me today is Keith Andrew.
Hello.
Hey, I think I'm just going to call you Keith the Business Andrew. I said it a couple of podcasts back, and now that's all I think of when I hear your name, for you are the business.
Really? Other people think of other things when they hear my name, I think.
Unbroadcastable things, no doubt.
Exactly, yeah. Sometimes yeah. They don't even think it, they say it, but yeah.
I was thinking it as I was gazing across Earl's Court yesterday afternoon at you, at your beautiful hair. You see, listeners, we were in Earl's Court yesterday doing this thing called the Big Indie Pitch, which is the second event what Pocket Gamer has hosted. What it is a bunch of indie developers all gather together and other people from the biz. And what we do is we turn up, us being Pocket Gamer and Sister Site AppSpy and 148 Apps and the whole Steel Media Network. And we allow them to come and pitch their games at us. It's kind of like speed dating, only with games and slightly less kissing, in my experience. Anyway, how did you fare, Keith?
I didn't kiss anyone. Oh. I did get a sandwich.
Oh, that's more than me, so you're doing pretty well there.
Someone tweeted to me before it kicked off that they thought they were going to be pitching to me and was there in a jokey way anyway they could bribe me. So I said as a joke, I'm going to keep saying that, as a joke, that they could get me a chicken and bacon sandwich and a cake and some expensive jewellery. And the guy delivered on the sandwich and he got me a muffin, but he didn't get me the jewellery, sadly. It was a good experience. You forget how many good games there are out there in a strange way.
Yeah.
Until you do something like this. And of course, you've got the person who's labored over it in front of you, which somehow makes it mean more, if that doesn't sound too cheesy.
Well, it does seem real in some way, doesn't it? We did this once before in Cologne when we were over in Germany, and they were queuing out the door for it. And obviously, there's a few of us journalists there and just queues of people, and these guys breathless to show us their game. And they've got, as you say, they've labored over it. It's their sort of love project. And they're just so keen to be like, look at it, it's amazing. And to the point where it's difficult to kind of get them all to move along and move on to the next person. They've only got 3 minutes, you see. But that tends to stretch on a bit further because they don't want to go. They just want to show you their game. And who can blame them? And it was a successful day. You guys judged loads of games, didn't you? I was judging last time in Cologne, but this time I was on video detail. But you guys were in the trenches doing the judging. Did you see some good stuff?
I did see some good stuff. I hope you're not going to ask me too much about what good stuff is all, because you see, when you see 21 games in a row, you forget 80% of them, to be honest. We saw. Can I mention the winner? I wasn't sure if you want to do a little trumpet noise.
Trumpet noise then. Yeah, tell us the winner. Who came gold or platinum, I suppose, in Pocket Gamer terminology.
The winner was a game called Voxel Rush, which is a 3D endless runner, where you're kind of guiding yourself through a series of kind of platforms, I guess, of pillars, I guess is what they were. It's all incredibly minimalist, so it's just kind of blocks, mm-hmm. and these white blocks, and you're going at hell of a speed, and it's a bit like Burnout in that you get bonuses the closer you go to these blocks. So obviously you don't want to hit them, but the closer you go, the quicker you get
them.
You get more danger points, as it were, and there's little boxes along the way you can pick up that slow time down or give you various other bonuses. So it's kind of, they start collapsing as well. That was quite a thrilling moment. The screen starts shaking as they start falling down on you, and it just had an incredible sense of speed. The guy who developed it, he wasn't there actually. His kind of publisher was there instead showing it, but I think he was 15 or something when he did it.
Wow.
So he was certainly, I think he's overage now, but it was very, very slick. But there were lots of really slick games there. There were lots of games where lots of developers, I think, now realise that it's not just the idea, it's how you present it. And not in a superficial way, but it really does make a difference. Even things like menu screens and stuff. Mm. You know, I'm not sure what our listeners think when they play some of these games by small developers, but, you know, it usually is one or two men team or women team or whatever.
Yeah. Like it used to be back in the Amiga days.
But you look at some of them, and you would assume that they had a whole department dealing with this, that, and the other, because some of them just look so slick. They look slicker than the ones from the big guys. So
it's amazing what you can do in your bedroom nowadays. And that goes for Shush you.
So more productive than what I do in my bedroom.
Certainly. But yeah, same goes for music and everything. Bedroom producers, it's just like sort of if you don't have either the finances or the inclination for the big studio system, you can just sit there with your iPad and your and literally code it on iPad. I mean, deputy editor Mark, as well as writing about games and all that, he made a game recently. He made it called Pixel This. One of those P-Cross games for the App Store. So he decided to, as a sort of experiment, make his own game. And he made it using the iPad. The iPad was the actual coding device. So it is literally just a dude sitting there with an iPad making a game and releasing it for real onto the App Store. This is what you can do now. Don't need to have EA behind you.
There was a game there that had been made entirely on an iPad. Mm-hmm. It was another Endless Runner, actually. It's, I think it was Soundride. And the guy had designed character and the environments on an art program on iPad and literally kind of just dropped them in.
Oh, yeah, I think I got some video of that game, yeah.
Yeah, it was good. And there's another one. I mean, it wasn't a game at all, really, but a kind of engine for first-timers where you could live update it as you go, and it kind of it gave you templates for like a shooter template or whatever template, and you can edit it, you know, and it happens. You edit it, and it's already changed on anyone who's playing it. It was quite certainly not sterile, and you don't really see two of the same game that come along, and everything's kind of completely different.
No, there's some mad ideas. It's always fun to see them out. And then we can look forward to seeing them turn up on the App Store in the coming months and stuff, see if they fare well. But there was a winner, and it was a good day all around. Although I understand you all went off for drinks afterwards, and I bailed.
We did go for drinks. I only just made my train, actually. So.
Oh, it went well then.
Yeah, no, it was good. It was a nice pub. It was, as all pocket gaming events are, it was very it was glamorous and full of alcohol.
That you just described yourself there, haven't you?
Yeah, I have got a bit of a rough throat today. You'd think I've been smoking.
Me
or something.
Too. For
I
what?
Really wasn't.
From the talking.
I don't know. I think it just sound like I've been to an all-night party or something. I was home at 11, so, you know.
Very respectable. Good on you.
I hadn't even realised this thing was hosted in Earl's Court 2 in London, that there was an Earl's Court 2. So that was...
That was your discovery for the
exactly.
day.
Exactly, having to go around the back of Earl's Court. And look, oh,
that's where they hold Eurogamer. Never been to Eurogamer?
I don't go to Eurogamer. It's got consoles and stuff.
Oh, yeah, that's true, isn't it?
Ugh.
Only one update this week, and it's about Minecraft. Turns out that Update 0.8.0 is coming very, very soon. Apparently sometime around mid-November. And we've got the changelog for what is going to be added to the game. So, in no particular order, you're going to get 3D clouds. Yeah. I love this. The incidental things they add to Minecraft always make me laugh. 3D clouds, amazing. I remember when they added clouds, just normal clouds. That was, you know, earth-shaking enough. But now 3D clouds are coming, guys. Also, you're going to get walls. Yes, you heard me right, walls. Also, sponges, birch, jungle, spruce planks, stairs, pumpkins, and pumpkin pie. Which, I mean, if you've got pumpkin, surely you have the tools and ability to create pumpkin pie.
Well, you need some pastry, don't you?
Oh, that's true. That's true. You do also get carrots and potatoes. That's not going to help you with the pastry, I suppose. And
some of the pastry. I don't know. Very weird way of making pastry.
Yeah, well, you know, I have a funny take on Thanksgiving. Carpet plus... Plus, they're going to fix the fact that fire doesn't set TNT alight. So at the moment, if you walk up to a bit of TNT with some fire, it doesn't go boom like you'd think it would. So they're addressing that clearly glaring error. So presumably you can then use it to bust big holes in the floor and blow up sheep. I mean,
will the boom it creates also create a 3D cloud?
Well, I would think so. And then maybe that's 0.8.1. That's down the line. I'm not sure.
You can't give it to them all at once, can you?
Got to string it out a little bit.
Stagger it out.
Keep them wanting more. Yeah, that's going to be coming out sometime mid-November, so Minecrafters look forward to that. It wasn't that long ago when we were gawping in awe at the brand new iPhone 5S and the slightly less awe-striking, I'm going to use that term, iPhone 5C. Production of which has been cut back quite significantly since launch because the uptake hasn't been quite as good as Microsoft, as Apple were hoping for.
It's been exactly what Microsoft was hoping for.
Yeah. No, apparently it hasn't really caught the world on fire.
It's not doing badly, but the problem is everything gets compared to how the main one's doing, and obviously that was always going to sell 17 trillion in 2 minutes.
So. Yeah, which it has done. However, this week we saw the brand new iPad models for 2013. So what we've got is the iPad 5, which is not called the iPad 5. They're doing away with the numbers thing. It's called the iPad Air. It's called that because it looks a bit like the MacBook Air, i.e. it's really, really thin. Thinner than any other iPad has ever been thin. 7.5 millimeters thin, in fact, and weighs just a pound, which is much lighter than the iPad 4, which is the one that I currently have. It's got a thinner bezel as well, 43% thinner on the sides, so it kind of looks like it's a bit taller, looks even more portrait than it was before, but it keeps with the same 9.7-inch display. The impressive thing beneath the hood, the thing that we're interested in really, is the fact that it's got the A7 chip, which is the chip that's in the iPhone 5S, which apparently, according to all the impressive blurb, says that it's like twice as powerful, graphically speaking, as the chip in the iPhone 5.
Yeah,
I'm interested to see what games are going to utilize that. Are they really utilizing the full extent of the iPad 4? There are only a couple of games, like benchmarking games, like, you know, Infinity Blade 3 and...
Well, yeah, because they can't do too much because there's still too much for a user base that has the old machines and exactly. They would completely alienate. So it's a nonsense. It's, you know, it's a gradual shift as the old ones fall off.
Yeah.
And the new ones, you know, it's never... They like to talk rubbish at these things, don't they?
There are a lot of big numbers. So it is impressive. And perhaps if you've got an iPad 2 or iPad 3, this would seem really, really enticing. As an iPad 4 owner, I'm like, I can't justify spending 400 quid just to get it a bit thinner. And it's future-proofing, I suppose. Maybe in 2 years' time, people will be taking advantage of that double the power graphical processor when it's the standard. But at the moment, it's going to be a while for anyone, I think, uses it to its full potential. So in the meantime, yeah. However, the iPad Mini is the interesting bit, I thought.
Yeah.
I've always liked the look of it, but the thing that was holding me back was that screen. It still had the 1024 by whatever it is, 768 resolution screen, which isn't very good, especially now. Once you've gone Retina, it's difficult to look back and go, you kind of go, ooh, it looks a bit rubbish. The iPad Mini 2, however, has been unveiled. Same size screen, same shape and everything like that. But it now has the Retina display, 2048 by 1536 pixel resolution. And it's got an A7 chip as well, just like the iPad Air. Whereas the previous one, the recent iPad Mini, it had the same chip as the iPad 2, didn't it?
Yeah, no, it didn't have the, yeah. To be honest, though, the most interesting news... Well, A, actually, bizarrely, rather than keep on the iPad 4, the iPad 4 has been scrapped.
Yeah.
And they're carrying on selling the iPad 2, which is... interesting.
Yeah.
And they're also carrying on selling the existing iPad Mini, but they've dropped the price to $299, which is the cheapest iPad that's ever been available. I mean, and that's only that's $70 more than Nexus 7 is at the moment, as I understand it. So I think that's the most interesting. Making the comparison to the 5C, it's a far better way of reaching to cheaper consumers than actually launching a supposedly low-cost model that isn't actually that low-cost. They've been able to, you know, that's the cheapest you've ever been able to buy an iPad new. It could be interesting to see what that does in market. That could actually help lift iPad share beyond its ridiculous rates as it is. I mean, iPad sales have been slowing. It's not the last few years. Last few quarters, it's missed its targets. You know, it's still selling ridiculously well, but it isn't growing in the same way that iPhone is still growing. So they are, I think, having to put a bit more thought into it. It was a weird day, though. I mean, having woken up at 7 a.m. to get up and cover Nokia's tablet unveiling in the morning, watch how they did that, and then hours later, or virtually 12 hours later, watch Apple's incredibly long presentation. Because you'll get all the Mac stuff before, which is no interest to me whatsoever. It was a weird day, and Tim Cook spent most of his time taking little digs at
the competition, didn't he?
Other people pointed out, well, you know, they do mention the competition usually, but these weren't specific mentions. These were like tagged on to the end of sentences, little jokes about Google and Microsoft and Nokia and everyone. And it was really un-Apple that they were spending that much time. So when actually the iPad did get revealed, and I think Air is quite a good name, actually. I think that's...
It into those MacBook Airs is wise, because it makes it seem even more kind of...
It seems exclusive.
Yeah,
and
very
slick
exclusive. And those things are 1700, 1800 quid.
And that's still something that Apple get right that everyone else doesn't. I mean, 5C is a bit confusing, actually, but they keep their naming very simple. And you compare that earlier in the day to the Lumia 2520.
yes.
It's... Yeah, I don't know why they do. Numbers are more acceptable on the phone, but to put it on the tablet, it does sound like it's a massive phone or something. You think, why have you given it that name? But the Air, it'll do well. We really are at the stage where they're not doing anything new with it, but I'm not sure what you can do that's new with it. It's a slicker, lighter looking iPad. Obviously, the advantage that newcomers have, like Nokia only now just launching their first tablet, is that, you know, anything's new because they haven't done one before. So,
It's got a screen you can touch with your finger.
The interesting thing that I think that Nokia are doing that almost all of the others aren't, is that Nokia have this focus on doing their own software at the moment. So Nokia are bringing, obviously, all their focus is on cameras, bringing all their camera apps across to the tablet, which is something that other than Apple, most other tablet manufacturers don't seem to do. They might put their own skin on Android or whatever, or you know, but they don't kind of flood it with their own stuff.
Can you get Photoshop on Surface?
You can get, you can't get Photoshop. I mean, you can if you've got a full price Surface. You can install the full Photoshop on it if you want.
But not on RT.
No, RT, there is a Photoshop app. Store, which I've got, which is quite cool, but you wouldn't want to use Photoshop on a tablet. It would be completely unusable. But have the idea of knowing that you've got to add value to these things if you want people to buy your brand, rather than just getting any old tablet which they can get much cheaper, which Apple are the specialists at, of giving the devices this gleam, which, even though if you strip them down, essentially they're not really any different to anyone else's, they have this added esteem because people think, oh, that's only on Apple. And I think Nokia are one of the few other companies that realise that they have to position themselves in a way that makes their products, even though there are other Windows tablets out there, including by the company that's about to buy them, you have to give consumers a reason. So it was an interesting day to watch them both. Very brave of Nokia to do it on the same day.
I know. Everyone tends to fall silent when Apple does one of its press conferences.
Yeah,
because it's like, you're just going to get lost in the noise of people shouting iPad.
Yeah, I mean, there was. I suppose for Americans, actually, kind of, I'm not sure it was the same day. On this side, you know, the Atlantic, it was.
It was an evening and a morning, perhaps.
And Americans care less about Nokia anyway. But yeah, it was an interesting day, and it was certainly the most un-Apple presentation I've watched in the years since they launched the iPhone. It was
a little bit spiky.
You know, I said the same thing at the iPhone thing, that they have lost a bit of their spark, and people are almost resigned to buying them now rather than getting incredibly excited about buying them. People think, oh, I need a new iPad. Oh, there's, like, you know, I'm tempted by that iPad mini for the same reason as you, in that I was tempted by the form factor of the original one, but the screen wasn't there. Now it is, I think. I'm quite tempted. But I'm not thinking, I must go get one, you know. It's a funny old game. Everyone was waiting as well. The biggest elephant in the room was the fact that a couple of weeks before, people were tipping that this really was the event where the Apple TV with apps on was going to be announced.
God, and how long have we heard that?
Exactly, but there we go. No, it really is. It really is this time. It was really coming, and then it wasn't. And people knew it wasn't. About 12 hours before, suddenly the people had been saying it was suddenly said, no, actually it's not. It's been delayed. So, you know, everyone knows it's still there. Everyone knows they're doing it, and you build up hype for that long. It will be interesting to see whenever they do announce it, whether it has a controller or however they manage to do it, whether it can live up to that hype. But in a way, they really need it, because they haven't had a new product since the iPad, really. And that's coming up for 4 years ago now. Yes. So if you want to keep that buzz around you as a company, in the same way that Samsung are desperately trying to get people to put phones on their wrists,
you have to
come up with something new. You know, not that it would be new, but, you know, something interesting, and that's what makes people nervy.
Faster and slimmer can only get you sort of so far in the excitement stakes, really.
Well, yeah, we'll get to the stage in like 3 years' time where the iPad literally is as thin as a piece of paper.
Which you don't want. It's interesting that when things get thinner and thinner, like my partner has just picked up an iPhone 4S, like, you know, very cheaply on contract, because you can get them that way now. And I like the thickness of it, you know? Like, it's obviously a lot smaller in terms of the screen size and stuff. It's not 16 by 9, but it's thicker than, you know, the iPhone 5 and 5S. I quite like it. It feels solid. It feels chunky and weighty, whereas the other ones feel a little bit thin and light and almost plasticky, even though they're not. They have that very lightweight feel to them. The 4S feels like a quality kind of product, you know?
Well, I've always said, like, going back to iPads, that if someone could take the insides of the latest iPads and the screen and put it on my old iPad 1 shell, because that was my fit to hold at the time, because it was chunky and it wasn't going to fall out of my hand. And the thinner and slicker these phones get, literally, and fact, tablets get, rather, I am liable to drop one. And they're, you know, a massive investment. These things are not cheap.
And
if they do, as both, actually, the funny thing that was interesting, actually, is that Apple's big pitch about the new Mini was that they really want people to leave the house with it. And earlier in the day, Nokia CEO Stephen Elop had touted some stat that suggests that 80% of people never leave the house with their tablet, and that the majority of usage of any tablet is in the morning before people either go to school or work, or in the evening when they get back. And these supposedly portable devices just aren't portable. And that's the focus of there. They've designed it so that it's thinner on the edges, so that it a bit like their phones, really, so that it sits in your hand better, fatter in the middle. So they're both kind of going on that, realizing that if you want people to leave the house with these things, you've got to make it so they can leave the house with these things and not think they're going to drop it, or not, you know, it's got to be physically portable.
Well, you mentioned the prices. They're going to take over from the previous models, like last time. So the iPad Air will replace the iPad 4, which they're going to stop selling now. It'll come in at £399 or $499 for the Wi-Fi model, and then £499, £629 for the 4G versions. Obviously, you'll get them in 16, 32, and 64, and 128 gigabyte versions. Mighty amounts of memory there. And then the next step down, like you say, will be the iPad 2, which will sell a bit cheaper. As far as the iPad Mini goes, iPad Mini, they're just calling it the iPad Mini. It's not the iPad Mini 2, is it?
No,
it's just that same name. The Retina one, the new one, that'll set you back £319 or $399 for a 16 gigabyte Wi-Fi version. And this also goes up to 128 gig if you want, or £419, £529 for the 4G Mini. Whereas the old one, which it has the smaller resolution, but like you say, that's the one that comes closer to like a Nexus 7, so £249 or $300. So finally, Apple does have a proper competing tablet with the Nexus 7 and those little 7-inch popular ones. I don't know. I still quite like the Nexus 7 screen.
That's what other people pointed out, that it has a nice screen for a cheaper price.
But yeah, it does.
It's quite, I mean, the lack of actually on the 2 on the Mini is quite important, because it enables them to brand the technically superior one in the same light, so people won't think they're getting a really cheapo naff one. They're essentially still buying an iPad Mini for a cheap price, which is, you know, it's clever. It's how you should do it, rather than 5C, I think, which still makes a big mistake.
Yes, that just confused anybody. Oh, well, you can look forward to those. They'll be out, I assume, in like, is it a couple of weeks? That's how they usually do it, isn't it?
I'm in a queue right now, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, November, both of those will be available, so you can grab them if you like, get your pre-orders in. Now, games. I'm actually going to talk about a few prospective games that are coming out before we go into the new releases. First thing, there is some hot air coming from EA. When is there not? from EA's Frank Gibbo? How do you pronounce that?
Yeah, what you said, yeah.
Gibbo, that'll do. He's been chatting with the New York Times about Battlefield. Obviously, they've done 3. They're just about to release 4, I think. And they were having a wee chat, and mobile came up during that conversation. And Gibbo said, and I quote, "We are working on a mobile game of Battlefield that will be high-end and high-performance. They reckon they can pull it off." He's saying, "We're embarking on something no one has ever done before, to get these games to interoperate between platforms." Now, I assume he means no one's got Battlefield to do it before, because unless he's been, you know, in a cave.
No one's ever released a game on mobile before.
No, apparently not, with guns in it. We've been doing cross-platform for a while now, but I assume he means a Battlefield game which can jump between platforms.
Well, you would hope no one else had done it. Otherwise, they'd have stolen their IP, wouldn't you?
This is very true. So, yeah, there's a lot of rhetoric around the idea of, will it work? Oh, I don't know. It might do. We're going to try it anyway because we are EA. Which is, like, fine. EA's done it before, though. It's brought its big things. Mass Effect did a mobile version of that. You got a mobile version of Dead Space as well. Both actually visually very, very strong. The Mass Effect one was a bit eh. Dead Space one was better. Extraction was quite good. So yeah, they haven't put a time limit on it, but they are doing it at the moment. So hooray if you like first-person shooters and that. The Call of Duty ones have been mixed in quality, I feel. The most recent one was kind of interesting. That First Strike, I think it was called. The one that let you switch between tactical viewpoint and first-person shooter.
Yeah.
But it didn't really focus on one or the other. It was a bit too... It sort of sat in the middle and didn't do either thing.
So it was a jack of all trades, a master of none. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, I am. That is a very succinct way of saying that, yeah. So I'll have to see what they're going for with this Battlefield malarkey. So yeah, that's on the way. Also, Disney have chimed up this week talking about their releases for 2014, one of which is going to be the Star Wars Lego games. They're porting those over to iOS for the first time. It came from a news site called Jedi News, which is like a Star Wars fan site, and they spotted it by looking at a brochure from the Brand Licensing Europe Expo, which they had listed out all the things they had upcoming for 2014. Amongst them was this. So you'll get to play the original Star Wars games, which were the games that kicked off the whole Lego platforming, you know, movie tie-in brand thing. And they were good too. They were fun.
Yeah, people like them.
Yeah, yeah. And obviously they have transferred a few of them over before. So the Lego Harry Potter ones came to iOS. And the Batman DC superheroes thing, that came to iOS as well. And I know there's an Avengers-style Marvel one in the works too. But yeah, the original ones are coming over, which will be fun for, I guess, people who haven't played it. I don't know. Hasn't everyone played this at this point now?
No.
Okay.
Not for any length of time.
Right. Yeah, I suppose it's been a while, hasn't it? And it's Star Wars. The word Star Wars is in it, so no doubt everyone
will. There's quite a few Star Wars games coming out at the moment, aren't there?
They're all double dip. What else is coming out?
There's that tiny... Is it what, Tiny Tower?
Oh, yeah, Fire? Yeah, that's right. Tiny Tower. Tiny Death Star is coming out from Nimble.
We just had Angry Birds Star Wars 2 the other month. I suppose that was a while ago now. I don't know. I'm out of touch with the kids these days.
Well, I think there's going to be a resurgence coming up to Episode 7.
Yeah, when is that?
2015. We've got a ways to go yet.
Can't wish our life away.
I know, but yeah. So old Star Wars stuff in preparation for new. How exciting. Something I am actually excited about, though. Did you ever play Papa Sangre?
No, but I know people who did.
Close enough. Well, it was a kind of unique game experience at the time. There's been a few games like it since. But it is an iOS game which is based entirely on sound. So you pop your headphones in, and the screen is essentially black, bar for a couple of icons, which allow you to walk around. So you, like, tap your fingers left and right, and that controls the movement of your feet. And the idea is you guide yourself around the environment using only the sounds that you hear. You can swipe the screen to turn around and make footsteps. And judging by, like, where a noise is coming from, that is how you essentially find your way around each environment. The idea is it uses binaural sort of faux 3D sound effects to kind of give you the idea that you're in a 3D space. It was really fun and unique and a bit creepy because it was done, you're supposed to be exploring the afterlife, so it's done in a slightly spooky way. And the sequel is coming out this Halloween, so in a week's time. And the person who's going to be your narrator this time around is none other than Ned Stark and Boromir himself, Shawnee Bean. So you're going to have the voice of Yorkshire guiding you round the afterlife.
Scene Bean
going, oh, scream
up. One of our writers is a massive Shawnee Bean fan.
Really? I didn't know there was such a thing. I suppose he got internationally famous through Lord of the Rings, but people probably know him now from Throne of Games. Game of Thrones. From Throne of Games more than anything, I suppose.
Yeah.
Because he got his... Oh, actually, I was going to say a massive plot spoiler for anyone who hadn't watched it, but I won't anyway.
He dies a lot, doesn't he?
He dies a lot in everything he's in, though. He gets killed, ultimately. I think he gets killed in Sharp, he gets killed in Lord of the Rings, and yeah. So it's just...
He hasn't been killed in the O2 adverts, so that's...
But fingers crossed, anytime now. Hopefully it'll start happening to Kevin Bacon. Because those cinema adverts,
it's starting to get annoying now.
Well, they were annoying to begin with, but it's just, I feel bad for him. I feel worse for me because I have to watch them, obviously. But I feel bad for him because you look at him in those adverts and he is dead behind the eyes.
He needs some money, doesn't he?
So. Yeah, clearly he has the tax man nipping at his heels or something because, yeah.
He can't understand half of what he's saying either. It's half of it's references to bizarre things on this side of the Atlantic. He must think, oh, I have no idea who that person is I've just referenced.
Yeah. But yes, Papa Sangre 2 out this October the 31st. I would look into that. I would mark that on your App Store wish list if there is such a thing. I think there is now. Because it could be cool. The first one's really interesting, really good fun, a little bit different. And I reckon they'll pull it out of the bag again with this one.
So
keep your eyes peeled, you know. About this week, we have the release of Dead Trigger 2. Once again, I am going to leave the dissection till later in the podcast. It's what I've been playing most this week. You can download it for free right now on iPhone and iPad. It's a zombie first-person shooter, and I'll tell you all about it in a little bit. Next up, Echo Prime, which has been released by the guys who made Hero Academy, which wound up being quite big. But surprisingly, I looked at some reviews, and it didn't get great reviews from some people when it came out, Hero Academy, but sort of took off in a big way afterwards. I think there was a lot of public support for it, which was the asynchronous turn-based strategy fighter sort of thing. This one, however, it's still got an asynchronous aspect to it, but it's much more of an arcadey, running around, sci-fi, top-down, slash-em-up, shoot-em-up thing. So it's a mixture of a touchscreen gesture-based combat. So you control a little soldier guy. He's legging it through space stations, blasting up aliens and flying drones and all that. If you tap an enemy, he'll fire. If you slash on an enemy, he'll run up to them with his laser sword.
Slash on an enemy.
Slash on an enemy, yes. That's a different thing. Yeah, if you slash over the top of an enemy, then he'll run up and whack him with his laser sword and that. The twist, however, is that there are these spiritual creature things called echoes, whom you kind of ally yourself with, and during a fight you can summon them and they'll give you a special attack or a passive perk or something like that. And as you collect them, you can actually loan them out to other players and borrow other players for yourself in return. So it's kind of like you swap your little perk power-up things online. And if you do so, then you get a boost and they get a boost, and it's kind of mutually beneficial. So there's this kind of loose social aspect to it as well. Played it for a little bit. It's very immediate. Within like 30 seconds of the game, you're kind of, yep, I get this, doom, doom, smash, swipe, and all that. So in that way, it's quite good fun. Don't know about the longevity yet. It's £2.99 or $4.99. I think it's going to be quite good fun. If you're in the mood for something a bit more strategic, though, Oil Rush, 3D naval strategy, which I've been hearing about for like over a year now. We were covering this like coming to Android a long time back. I think it was a PC game originally, but you might like this, Keith. It's a little bit real-time strategy. It's a little bit tower defense as well. Yes. Carry on. It's set in the sea. You control oil rigs, or you're trying to protect oil rigs from oncoming seaborne invaders. So you're supposed to take out the opponents and grab all their resources and whatnot, whilst I think looking after your own as well. You can claim oil rigs for your own, outfit platforms with weapons, and it looks really nice, like graphically speaking. It's properly pretty, all that beautifully rendered 3D water.
Some nice water, yeah.
Looks dead slick. It is £2.99 or $4.99. Haven't played it yet, but apparently it's simple, sharp, easy to pick up. What else you got? Combat Monsters, which is from Great Big War Game developer Rubicon. It's a free-to-play fantasy, looks like arena fighter, in which you're moving, not hex-based, but there's like a grid, circular grid-based system, and card-type game, so you build decks and play in very close-quarter fights. I haven't played it. Apparently, it could be all right. It's free to download, so you can have a go if you like the look of it. Here's something I haven't played. It looks a bit rubbish, but I kind of like the property. An Asterix game. Asterix, like the cartoons, used to always play on the TV when I were a kid, around the holidays, Christmas and Easter's and things like that. And I used to really like them, like the way they portrayed Caesar. But they've done a game, or specifically Bulky Picks have done a game, which is sort of a tower defense. Looks very much like Plants vs. Zombies, actually. Only not half as polished or good.
Yeah, it looks a bit homespun.
Yeah, that's kind of ropey, doesn't it? Well, the way it seems to work is you put the characters onto the grids, and exactly the same way as in Plants vs. Zombies, and the Romans advance at you from the right-hand side of the screen. There are certain tweaks, like you can only deploy certain soldiers once, but you can move them for a cost. It, to be honest, looks badly made. It looks kind of
weird. The resolution looks like it's been squashed. It looks
compressed. But
yeah, the whole thing looks like it's fat.
Yeah. Ooh, it looks kind of nasty. I haven't played it, but Mark says maybe give it a miss because it's just basically a rip-off of Plants vs. Zombies, only not half as well made. Blur to that one. But if you want it, it's £1.49 or $1.99. Chillingo's release of the week, because we've got to have at least one, is Fright Heights. Screen presents you with like a bisected view of a hotel, so you can see inside the rooms like in Tiny Tower or something like that. However, it's your job, rather than attracting people, to scare guests away from the hotel. So you have to fill the rooms with ghosts and monsters and other Halloween-y things. So it's quite a simple setup, as Mark says. But there are lots of ways to chase high scores. Apparently, you plan several moves ahead. You can chain together combos by putting loads of ghosts in a line, stuff like that. It's a bit puzzly, it's a bit spooky, and apparently quite good fun. You can download it for free right now on iPhone or iPad. Finally, we'll mention The Occupant, which is, from what I can work out, a first-person sort of survival horror thing, which appears to be riffing on the Slenderman thing, which most horror games are at the moment. And the way Mark describes it, imagine if Slenderman, instead of having a pinstripe suit, we got a weird zombie with an owl face and no neck, which is kind of, I guess, what it looks like, a bit weird. You've got this weird creature creeping towards you. Instead of going through forests, though, you're walking through halls and picking up books and lobbing crates. Clearly, it's a Slender Man ripoff. Not particularly interesting, but apparently it made Mark jump anyway. So fair enough. The screenshot's kind of cool. But So you get a quick look at the monster. So that looks good.
It's like it's being recorded on a video camera.
Yeah.
A security camera, I guess, would be.
I suppose so. But apparently, game doesn't really live up to it. But if you want to have a go, 69p, 99 cents right now. Come sit upon my throne of games. And we are back in the chamber wherein lies the throne of games. It's a bit empty in here, only the two of us this week. And you've pretty much already talked about the game you were playing most, the winner of the big indie pitch.
Yeah, I played it for 3 minutes.
Yes, that was that's all you need. Weekly gaming dose.
That's twice as long as we used to play for Pocket Game Reviews, yeah.
Impressive stuff. Luckily, I have played enough games for the both of us. And the main one I'll talk about is Dead Trigger 2, which is the sequel to last year's surprise zombie smash hit. As we all know, because if you're listening to this, you game on your mobile phone and probably other things too, you can't really shake a stick without encountering a zombie based mobile game at the moment. It's been going on for years now, and I was sick of it about 2 years ago, and I'm still sick of it now. One of the more successful ones was Dead Trigger. It came out and it was like a freemium first person shooter. It was a bit boring, it was a bit repetitive, but it looked amazing. It was one of those benchmarking games where people would go, look, check it out. It looks really good. Looks a bit like a console, this does. And it did look very impressive. It got reviewed kind of in an eh sort of way, but it took off. It made a lot of money through its free-to-play shenanigans, even though it wasn't originally, apparently, designed to be free-to-play. They released it as a premium game and then claimed that the piracy was so great on Android that they had to make it free-to-play in order to monetize it effectively. However, yesterday, Madfinger released the follow-up, Dead Trigger 2. It is very much following in the footsteps of the predecessor. It is still a first-person zombie blaster, but they've added a few things to it. What they have done is added some new zombie types. So you've got some weird monstery zombies, like mini-bosses that you encounter, and one particularly big boss as well. They have tried to expand on the environments as well. The first one, you're pretty much stuck in this sort of putrid green-looking corridors and hallways and stuff. So it all look pretty much the same. This time they are jumping from areas in the US, and then you jump over to Africa. So you get a lot of external kind of sandy type environments, and then you go inside and there are mines and things like that. So they've made efforts to kind of make the playing areas a bit more interesting this time out. So as well as the zombies in the play areas, the biggest change, I suppose, is the control scheme. And this has been very divisive. The first-person controls are always a bit shonky on iOS. We all know this. Those of us who are willing to admit it know this, anyway. So Madfinger's solution is to do away entirely with the fire button. Instead of you having to like move your right thumb around the screen to aim and then lift it up and put it on a fire button to shoot and then lift it, you know, put it back down again to move around, all you need to do is drag the crosshair over an enemy and the gun will fire automatically. This is something we've actually seen before in the World War Z game. It used a very similar technique, although you were rooted onto the ground, you were planted on the floor whenever a fight broke out, so you couldn't move around. This time you can still move around and everything, but you just fire by dragging the crosshair over a bad guy. In practice, what this means is you can fully control your character, so you can move forward, back, left, right, and circle strafe and everything, whilst still firing, which I think is actually an improvement. I think that's a good way of dealing with the problem, because when you have to lift your finger off and start pressing the fire button, you immediately remove your ability to aim. All you can do is move around like forward, backwards, left and right. You can't circle strafe or anything like that. Whereas now, you can. Some people have gone, "What? The game shoots for you? What? It's rubbish." And gotten all arsy about it. If you are one of those people, don't worry, because you can just change it back to the old controls in the settings. As far as the game itself goes, it's still kind of grindy. It doesn't give out very much gold at all, so you're going to have to grind for ages in order to get the upgrades and upgrade your sort of workbenches and stuff. The way they have it now is there's a home base, and you've got an engineer and a medic and a tradesman guy, and they control you upgrading your ability to create painkillers and upgrade your guns and all that sort of stuff. It still looks great. It's still one of the best-looking games on iOS. It's phenomenally good-looking. And I think the controls are better without the fire button. I think that it's actually a sort of fairly decent solution. It does get old. I mean, I've had to play it for quite a while, obviously, to do the review, and there's no sort of getting away from the fact that it is just another first-person zombie shooter. It's better than the predecessor. I think what they've done with the control scheme works. The new environments and new enemies are welcome. And the other thing, which, and it's so sad that this is a compliment, this is seen as a plus point now, it doesn't have an energy system. There's no stamina bar. So it's a freemium release that lets you play for as long as you like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Which is such a sad thing that I have to be like, oh, but it doesn't kick you out. And I'm, you know, mention it in the view as a positive. And you're like, the fact that I have to highlight that this is a game that lets you play it seems kind of tragic somehow.
Well, yeah, but then are they going to make any money? That's okay.
Well, I can't remember if the original Dead Trigger had an energy system. I don't think it did, and it still made a ton of cash. The way that it'll make money is that people want to advance through it quicker. And I get the impression, given its fan base, that people will. I mean, we'll have to see if it's as profitable as the first one. But it lets you play for as long as you like, but you don't get access to, for example, the best weapons and things like that. The way that you get weapon drops is by collecting blueprints from enemies, and then you have to build them, and it costs a hell of a lot of gold. Gold that's going to take you ages to grind your way through. So the incentive is there to drop a couple of quid and buy yourself a better shotgun that you can then use constantly, you know, throughout the game. But just the fact that you can, if you're a super casual player, just pick it up and play it for 5 minutes or even play it for an hour or 2 hours and not worry. If you really want to just play with the first gun, the pistol or something, and not upgrade, you can do that. And I kind of think that's good. I think it's a better way to use the freemium system from the player's perspective. Like you say, may not be as profitable. Don't know. We'll have to see. As a counterpoint to that, talking about the freemium system, Batman Arkham Origins was the game that I was playing a lot of over the weekend and last week and that. And that's the opposite. That's the game where it does throw up an energy system. There's a stamina bar in the middle and you have to bash your way through. And after about 4 or 5 fights, it locks you out and says, "Go away, Batman." Which I think is really un-Batman. This is a Batman that like gets into 4 fights and goes, just give me 10 minutes and we'll try again, yeah?
Well, he needs 10 minutes to go and get changed, doesn't he? So he needs to put on another outfit, or he's dressed as a cat.
You mentioned this last week. There's a flaw in your gripe against people have to go and get dressed up. Firemen get dressed up, Keith.
Yeah, but they're already dressed up. They're ready to go. That's the thing. He doesn't spend all day dressed as Batman, does he?
No, he spends all night dressed as Batman.
He's dressed as a normal guy, and then he's got, oh, I've got to go put on my spot. Yeah, and also, firemen aren't dressed as bats. If they were, then I would have a lot less... It's the effort, isn't it? Yeah.
The choice of costume, I'll grant you, is a bit...
He's decided he's going to look like a bat, you know, and you think, that guy would be locked up.
They got to catch him first. Which they probably could in Batman Arkham Origins, because he'd be sitting on the sofa going, oh, bloody hell, I'll just have a quick breather and a you know, bottle of Lucozade, and then I'll get back to it. So yeah, it feels weird.
Other brands are available.
Exactly. It feels weird playing a game like that where it's constantly saying, no, you can't play as Batman, go away. It feels odd. In terms of the game itself, it's very much Injustice Gods Among Us. It's basically the same game reskinned. It's got slightly more nuance, I suppose, because there's another stance he has. You can switch stances and fight in a more defensive or aggressive stance, depending on your choice. And there's so many upgrades. Upgrade every special move, upgrade every outfit, upgrade every stance. So there's all these different ways that you can potentially spend lots of money. They're really hammering home. It looks dead slick, but it gets pretty old pretty quickly. And just four fights, five fights, and you're kicked out of the game. And that just makes me want to put the game down and go away. It doesn't make me want to buy more. It makes me go, well, sod you then. Whereas I kind of know that Dead Trigger's there if I want it to be there. And that kind of makes you go, oh, maybe I'll have a go. It draws me back. I think it makes me more likely to spend some cash. But, of course, time will tell. Keith, are you going to play a game for next week's podcast, which we should have Peter back for as well? It'll be a group reunion.
I don't make any promises.
Well, yeah, because you can't just be us all the time. You've got to pull your weight, son.
It's just a busy time.
But you write about games a bit.
Not really. it's a literal hours thing. There are just not enough hours in the day to do everything.
All right, we'll play 3 minutes of something like you did this week and then get back to us and we'll spend our time playing the games. But in the meantime, thank you for listening. Come and join us next week. It'll be a big old reunion and we'll have a bit of a knees up on the podcast. In the meantime, take it easy. Lots of love. Bye-bye.
Bye.